Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
In the mid-1800s, Joseph Smith was a national icon and one of the most famous religious leaders in America. Considered a prophet by tens of thousands of devotees and a charlatan by many others, Smith had founded a new homegrown religion, recruited local followers to his cause, populated huge cities on America's western edge, and even ran for president of the United States. His enthusiasm for this new religion, Mormonism, had inspired his people to journey to the fringe of the American frontier, enduring physical hardships and the suspicion of their neighbors, resulting on more than one occasion in bloody violence. This hatred, stoked amidst the brutal heat of a summer's day, led to Joseph Smith's assassination at the hands of a mob of his neighbors in a jailhouse in Carthage, Illinois, on June 27, 1844. In his new book, American Crucifixion, The Murder of Joseph Smith and the Fate of the Mormon Church, Alex Beam tells the history of the founder of the Mormon Church, the times in which he lived, and the profound effect his death had on the religion he inspired. Alex Beam is a columnist for the Boston Globe and for the International Herald Tribune, and it's a great pleasure to welcome him to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Joe, thank you very much for taking an interest in my book.
I appreciate you taking the time. Give us a sense of what brought you to not just Joseph Smith as a biography, but also to look specifically at his death and ultimately to the violence of his death.
Well, right. I mean, this was and is a book project, you know, plain and simple. I mean, this is a sort of an incident in American history, an extremely violent incident on what was then America's frontier on the Mississippi River, you know, involved a religion that was going to become a very, very important religion in America. It also involved sex. I mean, it started as a book idea, and I have to confess it didn't even start as my own book idea. The editor who eventually published this for Public Affairs thought that this would be a sort of a terrific work of popular history. His assassination actually also takes place in a very compressed time scale. Dissident Mormons rise up against him on June 6th of 1844, and he's dead by June 27th. So it's a kind of, it's a quick tale. It's a quick, sexy, violent tale that involves a great religion. So I think that's why the book got done.
And in that period of time, it was basically this rift was over polygamy.
Yes. There's a chapter in my book called Everybody Hates the Mormons, which isn't meant to be 100% facetious. There was a rift inside the Mormon church over polygamy, which Joseph literally shocked his closest followers in 1843 and 1844 by saying, you know, you're going to have to take more wives. It was a secret doctrine that he told only Brigham Young and his most the other sort of intimate leaders, but it split the church in half. However, simultaneously, the Mormons had made very, very powerful enemies out there on the Mississippi. They were victims, essentially, of a so-called extermination in Missouri in the 1830s, and now they had resettled and founded a huge colony in Illinois and just really managed to alienate everybody who lived around them for religious, political, and economic reasons.
This comes some 14 years after the founding of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Right, in 1830 in upstate New York, in fact. I mean, things really happen quickly in Mormon history. I mean, 14 years later, there's probably 20,000 members of the Mormon religion in America, and probably another 5,000 in Great Britain. And of course, now there's 6 or 7 million Americans call themselves Mormons. Smith was, I mean, one of the intriguing things about Smith is that he was successful, that there were other men and women in upstate New York you know, who had their own Bibles, who were preaching millenarian visions with strange sort of strange angles or codas to them, and yet somehow, you know, Smith prevailed. He's killed, and his people, you know, still succeed when they go to Utah. So it's a very dynamic religion with a very, you know, the story of its founder is like no other story.
Well, you talk about the dynamic nature, but he was dynamic. There was a charisma there that helped him sort of forge this while others failed.
That's exactly right. I mean, you use the term charlatan, which is totally acceptable. I mean, Joseph Smith's detractors are numerous and powerful and legion to this day. I mean, he's a very tough person to pin down, but he was undeniably a charismatic preacher. Mormons also, I mean, even ex-Mormons, even anti-Mormons have to allow that he was an extroverted, gregarious, you know, interesting sermonizer. I mean, Mormons who even, like, Mormons living today who say, I just can't take polygamy. I mean, I cannot abide the fact that Joseph married the daughters of his close personal friends. They will then say, you know, but Joseph was kind of an okay guy. You know, he used to wrestle in Nauvoo. He used to drink. Mormons today are, you know, very uptight about drinking alcohol. Joseph Smith wasn't uptight about drinking alcohol, which is far from saying that he was a drunk. But he was clearly someone who enjoyed the men and women around him, you know, and had many facets to his complicated personality.
As you indicated at the beginning of our conversation, a lot happened in a very short period of time in that June of 1844. Talk a little bit about the power struggle that was going on, because in reading the book, I found that fascinating of what was happening within the powers that be of the church and ultimately a struggle.
Right. I mean, to answer your question, directly, Joseph, in the very end of his life, he's really on fire. I only use the adjective manic once, but he's kind of manic. He's running for president, as you mentioned. He's just introduced this kind of crazy you know, doctrine, which is still very controversial to our day. You know, he's baptizing George Washington by proxy in the Mississippi River, which is this, you know, posthumous baptism of non-Mormons. And then I don't mean to be too informal about it, but he's literally sort of cozying up to his closest companions and saying to them, you know, I want you to take so-and-so as a second wife. I want you to take so-and-so as a third wife. I want you to take so-and-so's daughter as a fourth wife. And the reaction is explosive. It's entirely negative at the beginning. Even his closest followers can't. You know, Brigham Young famously said, "It was the only time in my life I desired the grave." And what happens is, of course, an appreciable percentage of his followers simply feel that this is a satanic revelation. They just feel this can't be. You know, God does not want us to have conjugal relations with our friends' daughters. And an appreciable minority, an appreciable but powerful minority, which has also been opposing Joseph on some economic issues, because Joseph ran a kind of almost a quasi-socialist economic ship. You know, they publish this newspaper. They basically say that Joseph has lost his prophecy and that he's a false prophet, and Joseph destroys him and destroys them, excuse me. And those events lead directly to his assassination.
Upon his death, and you write about this in great detail in the book, but give us a sense, if you will, of ultimately what impact this had, his death had, on this religion, that when you think about the history, his death really had on Mormonism. The story changed as a result of his death.
Yes, the story definitely changes. His death is referred to as the martyrdom in Mormon history, and it's truly a hinge of American history, because after being shot at and killed in Missouri, after being shot at and killed in Illinois, and Joseph Smith and his brother murdered in their jail cells, the Mormons collectively get the message, which is, you know, we are not welcome in the United States. And dramatically, and certainly in my view, their young leader, Joseph Smith's successor, Brigham Young, says, I mean, this doesn't happen instantly, but he says, you know, we're getting out of here, and he leads 5,000 to 6,000 Mormons on this astonishing Mormon trek. He leads them from the banks of the Mississippi across the Rockies to the completely desolate Salt Lake Basin in Utah, which is well outside the settled United States. And when he actually crosses that river, Utah still belongs to Spain and Mexico. So, I mean, he is going to a place, you know, where the white person literally has not set his foot before. And you know, the rest, to be trite, you know, I mean, the rest is history. He founds a kingdom there the size of France that's called Deseret for a few years, which is an independent republic outside the control of the United States.
It is a fascinating story. The book is American Crucifixion, The Murder of Joseph Smith and the Fate of the Mormon Church. It is published by Public Affairs. Alex Beam, thank you so much for sharing with us this morning. I do appreciate your time.
Joe, I appreciate your questions. Thanks for making the time for me.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book, American Crucifixion, The Murder of Joseph Smith and the Fate of the Mormon Church, published by Public Affairs. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.